You're listening to the Woman's Hour Power List from BBC Radio 4.
It was reported yesterday that research by the Cranfield School of Management has found that only 17% of FTSE 100 boards had a woman. A government review had suggested a target of 25%. But Cranfield also found the momentum to improve matters has stalled, and the percentage of board-level appointments of women has fallen significantly in the last few months. Well, Helena Morrissey is the chief executive of her own investment company. She was the founder of the 30% Club, which aims to raise the number of women on boards. She's also on the Woman's Hour Power List, and we should mention she has only 9 children. Helena, we'll talk about the children in a minute. What did you make of the Cranfield report?
Well, it was a little disappointing, but to be honest, I wasn't terribly surprised. We had seen a huge pickup in the pace of change in the last couple of years, really since the 30% Club was launched and then the Davis Committee reported initially in 2011. And at one stage last year, the rate of FTSE appointments, non-executive roles going to women, was running at fully half of all the roles. And that was a dramatic change from only 13% in 2010. So we've seen a little bit of a lull. If I can correct one of your stats, it's actually that 94% of FTSE boards have a woman, or one or more. But the overall proportion of board seats held by women is 17%. So we're only down to 6 all-male boards as well, whereas when we first started our campaign, it was 21. So again, the results are good. We've just got to make sure we're not too complacent.
You are opposed to quotas. Why?
Very much so, yes. I firmly believe that you have to kind of own things to really enact change. And I think one of the things we're trying to achieve is sustainable, meaningful change for all women across business and with societal impact. And I think just opposing a quota, it's discriminatory against men, but also it's somewhat demeaning to women, and it doesn't work. We've seen in Norway where they introduced a quota of 40% women on their boards. Yes, they got that, but it's made absolutely no difference. In fact, the proportion of women in senior executive roles in Norway has actually gone down during that period. So I'm interested in change for everybody. We started with the board, and we're focusing our attention very much on women coming up through what people call the pipeline. It's not a very nice expression, really.
Well, let's take you back to the bottom of the pipeline. How did you start to get yourself to a position that took you to the power list?
Where to start, really? I don't want to bore the listeners. I graduated from Cambridge with a philosophy degree. Wasn't sure what I wanted to do and went into fund management quite by accident, really. In my first role, I had my first job quite early. I was 25, so early in the context of the city, and found myself pass over for promotion straight after coming back from maternity leave, and asked why, and was told, well, you know, just had a baby, not sure what your commitment is and so forth. And to be honest, that was a complete shock that my gender would have any bearing at all on what happened next to me.
How did you deal with that particular
In that particular case, I mean, it was a very traditional firm that I was working for, and I realised I could not change it. So I decided, and I think it's quite an important thing for women to sometimes realise, or anyone really, to realise when you can't change something, to move on. So I sought another position and joined a much more meritocratic firm, Newton, where I'm now the CEO. And there I really enjoyed the culture. And my line of work, fund management, is very much a results-based area. So, you know, it doesn't really matter how many hours you spend at the desk. It's your performance, literally, numbers at the end of the quarter or a year. So it's a very good career for women. You prove your worth or your value by delivering the results. And I do encourage young women nowadays to think a little bit consciously about the sort of career they might go in, because it's not always true that you can achieve the promotions through achieving that output. You sometimes are just judged by the hours at the desk. So anyway, cut a long story short, I took some of the opportunities that came my way. And I think that's something that I do notice and do encourage other women. Sometimes, well, you know, we do, as a horrible generalisation perhaps, but we do sometimes hold ourselves back. We overanalyse, we worry about what can go wrong. And for some reason, I was either missing that gene or just realised that there was something that I also was interested in doing.
But there had been a question about your one child. You then went on. Eight
more. I'm not
more.
Sure what that says about
Eight
me, really.
More. Mm. How did you manage work, maternity leave, childcare, all of those things?
Okay, so the real secret to my success is a supportive husband. So Richard is the person who looks after children. He was a journalist, went freelance when we had our fourth child. And we had what I thought at the time was just a normal conversation between two people working. How are we going to make it work? You know, there's no shortcuts. Sometimes people seem to think, I wave a magic wand and all the children, you know, all their issues are solved. But it's not like that at all. And it is a lot of work, but it works for us as a family because he's the one who enjoys being at home, or at least he tells me that. And I enjoy being at work. And although I do get the, you know, worries about the children and feel guilty sometimes and so forth, then that's how it works with our family. And I do think it's a shame sometimes that it's a default that, you know, women, when they have children, it's them that stay at home. It might be completely the right thing for the family. I'm not in any way saying that you shouldn't, but it sort of should be just more of a, you know, which career should sort of take off from here.
What do the children, who are now, I think, 4 to 21, mm-hmm. think of their busy mother's achievements?
Yeah, I think you better ask them, hadn't you? I'm sure that sometimes they think I am too busy. You know, I think that that's one of the things that I wrestle with, particularly actually since the 30% Club took off, and along with a very busy day job, you know, my Newton role is very full-time. I am very conscious of that. I like to think I'm something of a role model. Like, we have six girls to them. We have six girls and three boys, and I always remember asking my middle son when he was about 8 what he wanted to do when he grew up, and he looked at me quite quizzically and said, but I thought I'd stay at home like Dad. And so I think they as long as, you know, one parent's around, I think that's very important, certainly for us. And I'm not saying that you can't have a successful and a happy family with two working parents, and obviously that's a necessity for a lot of people. But I think in our situation, having a lot of children, you know, there is a need for one parent. I have to let go sometimes of wanting to be the one doing the school things.
And I know you're taking the 30% Club international. To Hong Kong, I think, first. What are you hoping to achieve internationally?
Well, the fact is that, as Sheryl Sandberg's book raises the international awareness around the topic, this is an international global phenomenon. This is not just something peculiar to the UK. And in Hong Kong, they have a very similar low proportion of women on corporate boards there. Lord Davis actually was out in the region, obviously he has a lot of ties still with Hong Kong, went to a women's group and they said, how can we accelerate the pace of change here? And he said, generously, he said, you should have a 30% club. They contacted me, and in fact they launched in March with 41 founding chairman supporters. Because remember, the supporters of these aren't women, typically it's men and women who are the chairman of big businesses.